A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He just moved into a new rental in Jerusalem, and on the first night, he's looking out the window and realizes he's staring directly at the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. Nobody mentioned it during the viewing. And here's the thing that got him thinking. He's spent 10 years increasingly frustrated with Jerusalem. He's coming off a nightmare tenancy that made him want to overhaul tenant law. He thinks the current government is a disaster, and yet, something about seeing that building every day has energized him. Made the political system feel less abstract, made participation feel less fanciful. So his question is, what does it actually do to us, seeing an institution of government from our window every day? And is that a general phenomenon, or does it depend on who's doing the looking? The question is whether that's just a personal reaction or whether there's something real happening, psychologically, when you can point to the place where decisions get made.
But first, let me just say, the fact that Daniel didn't notice the Knesset during the viewing is itself telling. The building sits on a hill in Givat Ram, deliberately set apart from the city center. It's not looming over a residential neighborhood like a cathedral in a medieval town. You have to be looking for it, or you have to be at the right angle, and then suddenly, there it is. That passivity matters. It's not the same as deciding to engage with politics. The institution inserted itself into his visual field without him choosing it.
Which is almost the opposite of how most of us interact with politics now. We curate our feeds. We choose which newsletters to open. We decide whether to click on the headline. The algorithm serves us what we've already signaled we want. But you can't unsubscribe from your own window.
And there's a concept in environmental psychology called incidental exposure. It's been studied mostly in the context of advertising and public health messaging, but the core idea is that stimuli you encounter passively, without actively seeking them out, affect your attitudes through a different pathway than deliberate information seeking. It lowers what researchers call the activation energy for a thought. You don't have to decide to think about Thingasset. Thingasset just shows up in your peripheral vision while you're making coffee, and suddenly you're thinking about a committee hearing you read about last week.
The mechanism isn't that the building transmits some kind of civic virtue through the glass. It's that it removes a step. Normally the chain is, something reminds you of politics. You decide whether to engage. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. With the window, the first step is automatic. The building is just there.
Right. And that's where the research gets interesting. There was a study published in Political Geography in 2023 that looked at residents in European capitals living at different distances from their national parliament buildings. They found that people within 1 kilometer reported 22% higher political efficacy. That's the sense that your participation actually matters, compared to those living 5 kilometers or more away. And they controlled for demographics, income, education, all the usual confounds. The effect held.
22% is not nothing. But I want to push on the mechanism. Is it the visual exposure specifically? Or is it that people who live near parliaments also tend to live in denser urban cores, where political conversations are more common, where you're more likely to bump into staffers at the grocery store?
That's the right question, and the study's authors actually addressed it. They compared residents with direct sight lines to the parliament building against those who lived at the same distance but without visual access. People whose apartments faced the other direction or whose view was blocked by other buildings. The sightline group showed a stronger effect. So it's not just neighborhood effects. The visual connection itself seems to do something.
That's remarkable. So Daniel's experience isn't just a quirky personal anecdote. It's a documented phenomenon. And I think what makes it land for me is that he's not describing a change in his political opinions. He still thinks the current government is a disaster. His words. The brokenness hasn't gone anywhere. What changed is the sense that participation is even conceivable.
Yes, and that distinction is crucial. Political efficacy isn't about whether you like the current government. It's about whether you believe the system can respond to you at all. You can have low trust in the incumbent government and still have high efficacy. You think voting them out will matter, or that organizing will matter, or that showing up to a committee hearing will matter. What Daniel's describing is a shift from abstract cynicism to something more actionable. The system is still broken, but suddenly it feels like a broken thing you could theoretically touch.
Then a set as a physical object rather than a news concept. You can see the actual building where the broken thing happens. And I think that connects to something Daniel mentioned about tenant reform law. He went through a horrible tenancy experience that made him interested in why Israel's rental laws are so underpowered. And now he's looking at the building where those laws get passed, or don't get passed, every single day.
That's the knock-on effect I find fascinating. The renewed interest isn't random. It's directed toward a specific legislative issue that directly affected his life. The Knesset view didn't make him suddenly care about abstract parliamentary procedure. It gave him a visual anchor for something he already cared about. Every time he looks out the window, there's a subliminal reminder. That's where tenant protection laws live or die.
There's something almost accusatory about it, right? The building just sits there, day after day, while your rental situation remains whatever it is. It's not a friendly reminder. It's more like a persistent question. What are you going to do about this?
Which brings us to the paradox of proximity. Living near a parliament doesn't automatically make you more engaged in a positive way. It can also breed contempt. There's a whole literature on what happens when people live near government facilities that they perceive as unresponsive. The classic NIMBY dynamic, not in my backyard, applies to more than just waste treatment plants. If you see the Knesset every day and nothing improves, the building can become a symbol of institutional indifference rather than democratic possibility.
The effect is conditional. The view can energize you, or it can deepen your frustration, and which one you get depends on whether you believe the institution is capable of responding.
And that's where Israel's current trust numbers are relevant. The Edelman Trust Barometer for 2026 shows only 38% of Israelis trust their government. That's a low baseline. So for a lot of people, the Knesset view might actually reinforce cynicism rather than counteract it. Daniel's reaction, frustration plus renewed interest, is interesting precisely because it's not the obvious response given those trust numbers.
I think what saved it for him was the surprise. He wasn't expecting the view. Nobody pointed it out during the apartment viewing, so the first encounter wasn't mediated by anyone else's framing. It was just him, exhausted, looking out a window, and suddenly confronting the physical reality of the institution. That moment of recognition. I can see the place where decisions are made, as a kind of raw power that a guided tour or civics lesson can't replicate.
The Knesset building itself was designed with this kind of visibility in mind, at least originally. The building was completed in 1966, designed by an architect named Joseph Klarwein. It's brutalist, modernist, and the large glass facade facing the city was a deliberate choice meant to convey openness and accessibility. The idea was that the parliament should be visually present in the life of the capital, not hidden away behind walls.
Which is almost ironic now, given what's happened since. The 2024 security upgrade added a 4-meter-high concrete barrier around the perimeter. The building is more fortified than it's ever been. And yet, from Daniel's window, it's still visible because of the hilltop location. The visual connection survives, even as the physical access becomes more restricted.
That tension between designed openness and security reality is actually a global story. Think about the Reichstag in Berlin. Norman Foster's glass dome was added in the 1999 renovation specifically to symbolize transparency. The dome lets visitors literally look down into the parliamentary chamber. 2.5 million people visit every year. The message is explicit. Citizens should be able to see their representatives at work. But the Reichstag also has extensive security screening, and the visitor experience is carefully controlled. The visibility is real but curated.
Then there's the UCapital Visitor Center, which is the cautionary version of this. Opened in 2008, 580,000 square feet, built to handle 4 million visitors a year. But it's entirely underground. You enter through a controlled experience. You move through tunnels. You see exhibits. Let's talk about the Knesset's specific design choices, because I think they reveal something about how Israel thinks about its democracy.
The Scottish Parliament is the counterexample I find most compelling. completed in 2004, designed by Enric Morales, and the whole concept was that the building should rise from the landscape. It's meant to symbolize the connection between the land and the legislature. That choice reflects a particular philosophy of government. The Nisset sits apart, on a hill, like a temple. It's dignified, but it's also removed.
We've got a spectrum. On one end, the Scottish Parliament trying to disappear into the landscape as a gesture of humility. On the other end, the Capital Visitor Centre burying the visitor experience underground. And somewhere in the middle, the Nisset designed for openness, now ringed with concrete barriers, but still visible from the surrounding hills because you can't hide a building on a hilltop.
The Indian Parliament's new building, completed in 2023, explicitly includes a public gallery and viewing platform. So some countries are still investing in the idea that physical visibility matters, even in an age of live streams and virtual tours.
Which raises the question Daniel is really getting at. In 2026, when I can watch Knesset proceedings on my phone from anywhere in the country, does it actually matter that I can see the building from my window? Isn't the digital access more democratizing than physical proximity, which is basically a real estate lottery?
I think the evidence suggests they do different things. Digital access is active. You have to choose to tune in. Physical visibility is passive. The building is just there. And passive exposure seems to affect a different layer of cognition. It's not about information transfer. It's about what psychologists call place attachment and spatial cognition. Physical landmarks anchor abstract concepts in a way that screens don't.
Say more about place attachment. I've heard the term, but I want to understand the mechanism.
Place attachment is the emotional bond between a person and a physical location. What's interesting for our purposes is that place attachment can transfer to institutions associated with a place. If you feel connected to your neighborhood, and your neighborhood contains a visible parliament building, some of that attachment can extend to the institution, or at least to the idea of the institution as part of your lived environment rather than an abstraction.
It's almost a form of spatial identity. I'm not just a citizen of Israel in the abstract. I'm a person who lives within sight of the Knesset. That's a different way of locating yourself in the political landscape.
It connects to what Daniel said about feeling like he's living in the center of policymaking. Jerusalem is a complicated city to feel attached to. It's politically polarized, the municipal politics are frustrating, the national conflict is ever-present. But the Knesset view adds a layer that's about agency rather than identity. It's not, this is where my people come from, it's this is where decisions get made. That's a different kind of belonging.
The Pew data on Washington D. backs this up in a different context. The 2020 survey found that D. residents were 3 times more likely to contact their representative than Americans living outside the Beltway, even controlling for education and income. Now, part of that is probably that D. residents are more politically plugged in generally, but I don't think you can dismiss the spatial factor. When you walk past the Capitol on your way to work, calling your representative doesn't feel like shouting into the void. It feels like walking next door.
The 2023 to 2024 judicial reform protests in Israel are a powerful case study here. Hundreds of thousands of people showed up outside the Knesset. For people living nearby, those protests weren't just news footage. They were audible. They were visible from the window. The political crisis was spatially present in a way that it wasn't for someone watching from Haifa or Tel Aviv.
Daniel would have heard those protests if he'd been living there at the time. And I think that changes the relationship. You're not just a spectator to a political moment, you're physically inside it. The sound of the crowd is coming through your window. You can see the flags and the signs. The boundary between private life and public event gets porous.
That's the thing about visible institutions. They blur the line between spectator and participant. You can't completely opt out when the institution is in your sightline. Even if you're not paying attention, it's there, quietly insisting on its own reality.
Let's land the mechanism, because I think we've circled it from a few angles. The window effect works through at least 3 pathways. 1. Incidental exposure. The building enters your visual field passively, lowering the activation energy for political thought. 2. Place attachment. The institution becomes part of your spatial identity rather than an abstraction. And 3. Blurred boundaries. The distinction between political spectator and potential participant gets harder to maintain when the institution is physically present in your daily life.
That's a clean summary, and I'd add a fourth, concreteness. Abstract problems become concrete when you can point to the building where they're supposed to be solved. Daniel's tenant reform interest isn't new, but the Nisette view makes it feel like a problem with an address.
Which is both empowering and potentially infuriating. The building is right there. Why aren't they fixing it?
And that's the paradox of proximity we talked about. The same view that energizes you can also remind you daily of institutional failure. It's not a magic cure for political cynicism. It's more like an amplifier. It makes whatever you already feel about the institution more immediate.
What does this mean for cities and architects? If we take the research seriously, the design of civic buildings should prioritize visual accessibility, not just physical access. Even if security concerns prevent open access, maintaining sightlines from public spaces and residential areas has measurable effects on civic engagement.
We're not doing a great job of this. The post-9/11 security environment has pushed legislatures toward fortress-like designs. The Knesset's 4-meter concrete barrier is one example. Capitol has layers of security that didn't exist 20 years ago. The British Parliament has armed police and extensive screening. The security concerns are real. I'm not dismissing them. But we should at least be aware of what we're losing.
The Reichstag dome is interesting because it tries to have it both ways. The glass dome says transparency. The security screening says caution. The visitor experience is controlled, but the visual symbolism is maintained. It's an attempt to preserve the civic benefit of visibility while managing the security reality.
The Scottish Parliament takes a different approach entirely. By integrating the building into the landscape, it makes a statement that the Parliament isn't a fortress to be defended. It's part of the community. The security is there, but it's not the architectural statement. The architectural statement is about connection.
For listeners who don't live near a parliament, I think Daniel's experience still translates. The mechanism works at any scale. You don't need a Knesset view. You need a visible civic institution that you can point to. City hall, a courthouse, a school board office. The key is that the institution exists in your physical space, not just in your newsfeed.
There's a simple experiment Daniel suggested that I think is worth trying. Spend 5 minutes a day looking at a civic building, or even a photo of one, and notice whether your thoughts about politics shift from abstract to concrete. It sounds almost too simple, but the incidental exposure research suggests that even brief visual contact can shift attitudes over time.
The photo version is interesting because it democratizes the effect. You don't need the real estate, you just need an image. I'm skeptical that a photo would have the same power as the actual building in your actual window, but it's a testable hypothesis.
I'd guess the photo effect is weaker, but not zero. The building outside your window has permanence and scale that a photo doesn't. You can't close the tab on the Nisette. It's there when you wake up. It's there when you go to bed. It's lit up at night. That persistence probably matters.
Daniel mentioned that the view becomes less amazing every day. That's habituation, the psychological process where repeated stimuli lose their impact. But habituation doesn't mean the effect disappears entirely. It just moves from conscious awareness to background processing. The building is still there, still doing its quiet work, even when you stop noticing it consciously.
The Nisette has the plaza, and we saw during the judicial reform protests of 2023 and 2024 how that space became a stage for democratic expression. The building itself became a character in the story. The effect works through familiarity, not novelty.
You're standing in front of the building where the policy was made, and that's exactly when the deeper effects on police attachment and political efficacy start to operate.
In an age of digital organizing, physical focal points still matter enormously. The Nisette view is like a third place for political identity. You encounter it casually, repeatedly, without agenda, and over time it shapes how you understand your relationship to the political system.
That's a lovely framing. The Nisette as a third place for civic identity. You're not there to lobby or protest or tour. You're just coexisting with it, the way you coexist with a neighborhood park.
For Daniel specifically, the next step is whether this renewed interest translates into action. He mentioned tenant reform law. Knesset committee hearings are open to the public. You need to go through security screening, but they're accessible. If the view has lowered the psychological barrier to participation, the logical next step is to actually participate.
Show up to a hearing on rental law. The building you've been looking at for weeks is the same building where those hearings happen. The distance between window and committee room is measurable in meters, not abstractions.
That's the test, really. Does the window effect change behavior or just attitudes? The research on political efficacy suggests that higher efficacy leads to higher participation, but it's not automatic. There's still a gap between feeling more connected and actually doing something about it.
Daniel seems aware of that gap. He said the view doesn't magically give him a political voice. He's not claiming the Knesset is going to solve his problems because he can see it. He's describing something more subtle, a shift in what feels possible.
Possibility is not nothing. A lot of political disengagement isn't about laziness or apathy. It's about a sense that the system is so distant and abstract that individual action is meaningless. If a visible parliament can counteract that feeling even slightly, that's a real civic benefit.
Let's talk about the flip side for a moment, because I don't want to romanticize this. There are people who live near parliaments and feel nothing but resentment. The building becomes a symbol of everything wrong with the system, and seeing it every day just rubs salt in the wound. Is there research on that side of the effect?
There is, and it's mostly in the NIMBY literature. Proximity to government facilities can increase frustration when the institution is perceived as unresponsive or harmful. If you live near a parliament and your community is neglected, the building isn't a source of civic pride. It's a daily reminder of your powerlessness. The effect is conditional on perceived institutional responsiveness.
The same view can produce opposite reactions depending on context. For someone who feels the system works, visibility reinforces engagement. For someone who feels ignored, visibility reinforces alienation.
Most people are somewhere in between, which is what makes Daniel's case interesting. He's frustrated with the current government, he thinks it's a disaster, but the view still energized him. He didn't tip into the resentment side of the spectrum. Maybe because the surprise of the discovery short-circuited his usual cynicism. Maybe because the view is genuinely beautiful at night. Hard to say.
The aesthetic dimension is worth mentioning. The Knesset is not an ugly building. The brutalist modernist style isn't to everyone's taste, but the hilltop setting, the lighting at night, the way it anchors the skyline. There's something visually compelling about it. An ugly parliament building might not have the same effect.
That's an empirical question I'd love to see studied. Does architectural quality moderate the window effect? If your parliament is a concrete bunker, does the visibility still increase efficacy, or does it just remind you that your government has terrible taste?
The Scottish Parliament building had a lot of architectural controversy when it opened, massively over budget. The design was polarizing, but the landscape integration concept was deliberate, and over time it's become a beloved part of Edinburgh's civic identity. So maybe the aesthetic effect is partly about time and familiarity.
Which brings us back to habituation. The building becomes part of the landscape, and the landscape becomes part of your identity. The process is slow and mostly unconscious. Daniel's only been in the apartment a couple weeks. I'd be curious to check in a year from now and see whether the effect has deepened, faded, or changed character entirely.
My guess is it'll stabilize into something quiet and persistent. The view won't be amazing anymore, but it'll be meaningful in a way that's hard to articulate, like living near the ocean. You stop noticing it consciously, but you'd miss it if it were gone.
That's the thing about place attachment. It's not about constant awareness. It's about what happens when the attachment is threatened. If someone proposed building a high-rise that blocked the Knesset view, Daniel would probably feel a surprising sense of loss, even though he's only had the view for a short time. The attachment forms faster than we expect.
All right, let's pull this together into something actionable. If you're listening and you live near a government building, pay attention to whether its visibility affects your sense of political agency. Try the 5-minute experiment. If you don't live near anything governmental, identify the nearest civic institution and make a point of passing it regularly. City hall, a courthouse, a school board office. The mechanism works at any scale.
If you're an architect or urban planner listening to this, take the research seriously. Visual accessibility matters. Even when security concerns prevent open physical access, maintaining sight lines from public spaces and residential areas has measurable effects on civic engagement. Don't let the fortress mentality become the default.
For Daniel, the next step is clear. The tenant reform interest that brought him to this apartment, the horrible tenancy experience, the frustration with underpowered rental laws, has a physical address now. The Knesset committee hearings on rental law are open to the public. The building he sees from his window is the same building where those hearings happen. The distance between looking and participating is shorter than it's ever been.
That's really the core insight here. Democracy is not just a system of abstract rules and procedures. It happens in buildings, and sometimes those buildings are right outside your window. The question is whether we're designing our cities to preserve that connection, or whether we're slowly, accidentally eroding it behind concrete barriers and underground visitor centers.
As security concerns continue to push parliaments into fortified compounds, I wonder whether we're losing something we don't know how to measure. Digital alternatives, live streams, virtual tours, social media, they're valuable, but they don't seem to replicate the passive, habitual, spatial relationship that comes from sharing physical space with an institution. You can't live stream the feeling of looking out your window and seeing the place where decisions get made.
The Reichstag Dome gets 2.5 million visitors a year. People don't go because they need information about German politics. They go because they want to stand in a physical space that represents democratic transparency. The experience is spatial, not informational, and that spatial experience matters in ways that are easy to dismiss but hard to replace.
Daniel's view might become routine, but the initial jolt of recognition, I can see the place where decisions are made, is worth holding on to. It's a reminder that the political system isn't just something that happens to us through screens and headlines. It has a location. It has walls and windows and lights that stay on late when something important is being debated. And sometimes, if you're lucky or unlucky, depending on your perspective, you can see it from where you sleep.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, a Danish botanist in Greenland discovered that certain Arctic lichens produce a compound that slowly dissolves the rock they grow on, unintentionally creating microvalleys that, over centuries, redirected meltwater and reshaped entire sections of the coastal terrain.
Lichens as landscape architects.
Let's end with something that I think will stick with me. The buildings where democracy happens are not neutral. Their visibility, their design, their accessibility, these things shape who feels included in the political process and who feels like a spectator. Daniel's window gave him an unexpected reminder that he's not just a spectator. He's someone who can point to the building and say, "That's where it happens, and I'm here." That's not a small thing.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone about it. Especially someone who's ever looked out a window and seen something they weren't expecting. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.